This is the Heartland Daily Podcast.
The other day, the Heartland Institute's Chris Talgo, editorial director and research fellow at our Socialism Research Center, was a guest on Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT Radio. Chris was on the show to talk about how regular election laws, designed to make it secure, were all thrown out for the 2020 election. Chris talked about the poll the Heartland Institute and Rasmussen Reports released late last year, in which 1 in 5 Americans who mailed in their ballots admitted to at least one form of illegal voting. We have to make sure election integrity is paramount in the 2024 election, not let cheating and illegal balloting happen to the level that it happened in 2020. Have a listen.
Without CO2, the world stops breathing. CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed on TNT with Mark Morano. All right, well, joining us now is Christopher Talgo, the editorial director and socialism research fellow. He's a managing editor for StoppingSocialism.com, a very needed resource and publication in today's world of 2024. Welcome to the program, Chris.
And thanks for being here, Mark.
All right, let's talk about elections. Joe Biden, according to the narrative, got more votes than any other president in U.S. history in 2020 and beat Donald Trump in key swing states. And the election was fair. There was no problems. And anyone who says otherwise is an election denier who's guilty of misinformation, disinformation, and therefore should be censored. How much of that official narrative is wrong? Let's start. What exactly happened with the 2020 election? And was it part of a long trend, or was it some kind of big rapid acceleration that a lot of changes occurred, because of COVID that happened? They never could have got away with this, say 2016, 2012. So lay out the case. What happened in our election in 2020? Who won the election, Donald Trump or Joe Biden, in your view?
Well, I think it was much more the latter. So what happened in 2020 has never happened before. Under the guise of the pandemic, we had governors, we had secretaries of state go and change the election rules, which is unconstitutional because only state legislatures can do that. So they did that under the guise of the pandemic. And then what happened was they sent out mail-in ballots across the board to almost every point on their election roll. If they didn't send them a ballot, they sent them a request for a ballot, which is basically the same thing. So what we had happen in 2020 was 65 million people vote by mail. That was more than double the amount of people who voted by mail in 2016. But like you were alluding to earlier, this has been part of a trend. In 1992, for example, 91% of Americans voted in person on Election Day. By 2020, that had decreased to 30%. 70% of people voted well before Election Day, because now you can vote 6 weeks before Election Day in several states, or they voted by mail. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that states solve this problem in anticipation of the 2024 elections upcoming. But what also happened in 2020 was you had this flooding of the zone with mail-in ballots. States also went and intentionally did away with a lot of the common sense guardrails, such as signature verification or presenting a photo ID and all that kind of stuff. So they made it so so much easier to cheat. Now, what we found in our poll, we conducted a poll with Rasmussen Reports in December of 2023. We asked 1,085 voters, did you vote in the 2020 election? Yes or no? And then did you vote by mail? Yes or no? Among those who voted by mail, we found that 28.2%, more than 1 in 4, admitted to committing at least one type of election fraud. So that could have been something like, well, I didn't live in the state in which, no, I'm a permanent resident, but I voted anyways. I filled out a ballot for someone else. I signed someone else's ballot. Even 8% admitted, which just blows my mind, 8% admitted that they received a bribe in return for their vote. So what we did was we then said, wow, this is, pretty stunning stuff. 28% of, mail-in voters, cast a ballot illegally. Wonder if that would have impacted the results of the 2020 election. So what we did was we took the state data that was available to us for the mail-in votes. And in some states, like Arizona, for example, it was 90% of people voted by mail, which again is just mind-boggling to me. And we then we extrapolated the data from the Rasmussen survey. And what we tried to do was we tried to determine if you were to eliminate the mail-in ballots that were cast fraudulently, whether that was 28% of them all the way down to 1% of them, what would have happened in the 2020 election? Under almost every single scenario that we did, that we, you know, performed, Donald Trump would have won the 2020 election. Because in those six swing states, those six crucial swing states, Joe Biden won each of them by less than 20,000 votes.
Wow. So if you look historically, the argument will be, well, we've always had mail-in votes, military members. What's wrong with a mail-in vote? I mean, yeah, don't you trust people in the country to vote correctly? Or what's the problem with a mail-in vote? Tell us why that's such a big deal overall.
Okay, so the biggest problem with mail-in voting is that they send the ballots or they send the absentee requests for a ballot based on outdated, notoriously inaccurate voter rolls. So as we saw in the 2020 election, states do not clean their voter rolls on an annual basis or even semi-annual basis, even every 10 years or so. So whoever's on the voting roll, whether they're dead, whether they've moved, whether they're no longer eligible to vote, whatever the circumstance is, they're getting either a ballot sent to that address or they're getting a request for a ballot. Now, that's a big, major problem, because in several states, there are tens of thousands of people who should not be on that voter roll anymore. We'll never know what happened to those tens of millions of ballots that were sent to those people across the country and what happened to them in 2020, which means that they could have, you know, whoever lived at that address that the person no longer lives at, they could have just filled out their ballot, thrown it in the mail, and there you go, there's a, you know, vote cast. So it's very difficult to prove after the fact, but you know, what we're really interested in doing is making sure that it does not happen again in 2024.
All right, well, so a mail-in vote. Now, obviously, each state election law is different, because here in the United States, you know, it's not like a federal standard that all the states have to comply with, right? They can pretty much do whatever they want. Is there any limit on that? Is the Supreme Court ruled? Are there any federal guidelines? Like, can a state just say, you know, we're going to have people click a mouse and vote, or they can send a text on their phone? Is there any limit that the federal government wouldn't accept for voting for federal office?
Well, what happened in 2020 in particular is that the Supreme Court of the United States and the state Supreme Courts, they refused to rule on these, because they were under the assumption that, hey, it's a pandemic, emergency declarations were in place. As you know, almost every state governor declared some sort of emergency in light of the pandemic. And in light of those emergency declarations, they were allowed to go above and beyond what they ordinarily would be able to do. However, it still doesn't matter, because this Constitution specifically designates that only state legislatures can conduct or make rules on how elections should be conducted. So, you know, to answer your question, yeah, we do have a smorgasbord across the nation of different, voting rules by, you know, each state. Some are much more lax than others. You know, California, they love ballot, harvesting. They love ballot stuffing. They send everyone, every single person on their rolls a ballot, versus other states like Georgia and Florida, for example, where they don't do that anymore. So, yeah, there's definitely a spectrum there. But what happened in 2020 is even those states that you would have thought, whether it was Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, that would have had, you know, decent methods in place, all of them were eliminated. So it was just like anything goes in 2020.
Well, then the question is, when these states, and again, the state laws are all different, how do they verify a mail-in ballot? Is there a policy procedure they're failing to do, or is just the very idea unverifiable? Like, if they're getting all these ballots, isn't there someone to go through and say, okay, no, this person died, this person left the state, they're no longer eligible? Is there especially in the six states, what sort of voter verification for the mail-in ballots existed or was supposed to exist?
So one of the best things that they can do is do a signature verification. However, they did away with that. Like you said, you know, there are a bunch of other guardrails in place, whether it's, you know, making sure that the person is eligible to vote after the fact or whatever, but those were all just done away with willy-nilly. So they made it they made it basically an invitation to fill out illegal mail-in ballots. You know, and there's also a, you know, bunch of anecdotal stories in the months leading up where ballots were found, like just bags of ballots found in ditches, just all over the place. I live in a, you know, pretty big apartment complex in the Chicagoland area. And in 2020, in the months, in the weeks leading up to the election, because Illinois is one of those states that did send out a ballot to every single person on their voter rolls, there were several ballots just sitting around in our mail room on the counter because no one knew, hey, this person doesn't live here. And you know, that happened on a massive level across the country.
Wow. So was there, there was, I don't know the year, but it was maybe 2005 or something. Wasn't there a presidential commission with James Baker and I want to say Jimmy Carter who advised against mail-in balloting in the first place? Do you have any information on that commission? I think it was maybe 15 years before, about 2005 or so.
You are spot on. 2005, former President Jimmy Carter and former Secretary of State James Baker produced a report, which we cite throughout our policy study, which said that there's ample evidence to prove that voting by mail is much more prone to fraud. There are so many reasons why. And they said, you know, we should try to minimize this as much as possible. Obviously, there are exceptions, you know, people who are disabled, like you said, people who are serving overseas, people who might be living abroad. But, you know, what's happened since 2005 in particular is the notion that you have to have an excuse to vote by mail has been just completely done away with. And it's all about convenience, convenience, convenience. That's how they want to make it, you know, appear to be. But as we know, yes, the convenience also means that it's much more easy to commit voter fraud.
Now, at the time, you know, and I want to get into the COVID restrictions probably after the break, but at the time, there was a lot of focus on the voting machines. And I think, you know, initially, you know, in terms of like, I guess from the Trump campaign, all we heard about was the voting machines, the irregularities, the software, the lack of security. And did that all not pan out as anything to be concerned about, or was it overblown? And the real issue was mail-in, or is the mail-in related somehow to the electronic voting machines? What's your stand on that and your investigation look into that at all?
We didn't really focus on the voting machines, but you know what our research showed is that paper ballots are by far and away the best possible way to make sure that the vote is accurate. You know, those voting machines, you know, there's been lots of stories of them double counting votes and, you know, changing votes and all that kind of stuff. Once again, I can't, you know, confirm that or not. But what we are recommending is that everyone votes using a paper ballot, because those have a, you know, those you can count after the fact and you can confirm and verify. The voting machines, you know, that's something that you cannot, you know, trust.
Well, we saw, you know, the old expression is that voting, counting votes is more of an art than a science, right? So you go back to Florida 2000 with Bush, and you had the hanging chads, and they were going through with all the voter and the people they claimed accidentally voted for Pat Buchanan, which would have been a margin in some count. Anyway, so the question really is then, when you have these mail-in ballots, these six states, let's focus on those. Couple questions. Are the ballots still around? Number one. Number two, is it possible that even today someone could gather up all of these ballots and actually try to trace them or find out? Or are the ballots actually blank? In other words, is there a name associated to the mail-in ballots when they get them? Or is it just an official ballot with an anonymous vote on it, and on these six states in particular? And is there a way ever to truly audit that and recount the election with someone going through and saying, this person's dead, this person doesn't live here, this person's not eligible, this person doesn't exist? Is there any hope for that? Or are these mail-in ballots thrown away like 24 hours after election day or incinerated or something?
So it's a combination of those things. Some of the states have a ballot with no one's name on it, and they discard the envelope immediately after the fact. So once the envelope's gone, you don't know who the person was. Arizona, for example, they perform multiple audits after the 2020 election, and you know, reports came out that ballots were missing, that they were burned, that they were misplaced. So there's a lot of stuff like that happening after the fact. And you know, another big problem that I think the people of America understood was happening in real time before the very eyes was the lack of transparency with the voting process. Whether it was what happened in Atlanta with, you know, this pipey burst and then they just quit counting in the middle of the night, or some of the stuff in Detroit where they put, you know, paper over the window so you couldn't see what was going on there. There was a lot of funny business and a lot of weird stuff that was going on. I stayed up that night until, you know, the wee hours of the morning You know, at one point it looked like it was a complete lock that Donald Trump was going to win re-election. And then all of a sudden we got to stop counting. And then we see trucks coming with more ballots and all this just crazy stuff. And then, you know, a couple of days later they say, well, after all, now, you know, counting all these mail-in ballots that just magically appeared sometimes out of thin air, it just so happens that that Joe Biden won by the most minuscule of amounts in those crucial swing states.
Well, the other thing you'll hear is, well, every court that's looked at these, the claims like you're making that, you know, that there's a lot of irregularities, said that there was nothing there and they were dismissed and that no judges, no court in any state has ever agreed with this in the Supreme Court. And they use that as a way of saying there's a no there there. Can you tell us the story behind what were all these court cases? Why didn't any of them get full hearings? Why didn't anything go that way? Why didn't the Supreme Court look at these irregularities? I know there's a lot of federalism as well there and also other jurisdictional issues, but explain, because you'll almost invariably, if you're having a conversation with a Biden supporter, the first thing out of their mouth is no court agrees with anything you've said. Every court dismissed these, but there's nothing there. So how do you respond to that?
Okay, so there's two main points that I want to make on this. So first of all, as I said earlier, it is very difficult, if not impossible, to prove some of these after the fact, because whether the ballot was discarded, whether the envelope was discarded, it's literally impossible to prove. The other thing that a lot of the courts, I think, were reluctant to make somewhat controversial rulings on this because they didn't want to be the arbiters of the election. You know, you talked about 2000, and I remember 2000. I remember that the Supreme Court did make that call in Florida, and there was a lot of, you know, people in, you know, in the country that were really angry about that. No, the Supreme Court should not, you know, declare who wins and doesn't win. So I think, you know, the Roberts Court said, you know what, we want to stay away from this. But I don't think that that was the best decision. It was a short-term political decision. But what it did was it emboldened a lot of these states to say, well, we got away with it in 2020. We're going to get away with it again and again and again.
So the other courts, you know, I think like the local state courts, how come there was never, were they just jurisdictional issues, or how were the judges, you know, like Democrat operatives? They just didn't want to see the cases. Was that the same thing on the lower courts as well?
Same thing in the lower courts. And a lot of this was, you know, it was done under the emergency declaration. So the emergency declaration just gave these secretaries of state and these governors wide ranging powers to do things that they ordinarily could not do. And the state Supreme Court, even the lower courts in a lot of the states, they just went along with that. They went along with that narrative, even though, as you, I'm sure you remember, there were many instances in the summer of love of 2020 in which people were said, you can go protest, that's fine. So it's like, you know, if it's a social justice cause, you can go and do anything you want. But by November, you know, well after the pandemic, you know, really had like hit hard, they were telling us, if you go and vote in person, you might die, which is just patently absurd. But it just goes to show that they were pushing as hard as they could to make mail-in voting, you know, the new normal. And to some degree, they are succeeding. And that's why we're trying to make sure that the American people understand that this mail-in voting thing, which they're trying to say is like, this is like, you know, the new way of voting. No, this is not the new way of voting.
Wow. All right, well, that's why I'd like to talk to you about some of these emergency powers that they used to make this happen. We take a break. We're talking to Christopher Talgo, editorial director for Socialism Research and Socialism Research Fellow at the Heartland Institute, who has a new study out looking at the 2020 election. And basically, you're saying that Donald Trump actually won based on your analysis. Am I correct in saying that?
Absolutely, you're correct in saying that.
Okay, and so we'll be right back to continue this discussion. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned.
Before we get to the rest of this podcast, I wanted to let you know about two fantastic live podcasts Heartland produces every week. We'd love for you to join us every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central, live for our flagship In the Tank podcast. You can watch on the Stopping Socialism TV channel on YouTube, where you can participate in the show in the chat with other fans and also ask questions that we'll address on the air and put up on the screen. And every Friday, also at 1 p.m. Eastern and noon Central Time, you can go to Heartland's main YouTube channel. Just search for the Heartland Institute on YouTube for the new Climate Realism Show. Heartland's climate team of Anthony Watts, Sterling Burnett, and Linnea Lucan cover the crazy climate news of the week, debunk mainstream media myths about the so-called climate crisis, dig into energy policy, and much more. The show often features guests that include some of the leading climate scientists and energy policy experts anywhere in the world. There is no show like it. So become regular live viewers of both of these programs if you are interested in smart, lively, fun, and interactive conversations. We hope to see you there every Thursday and Friday afternoons at 1 p.m. Eastern and noon Central at the Stopping Socialism TV and the Heartland Institute channels on YouTube. Oh yeah, we're also on Rumble. See you there.
Fearless, informative, and unfettered. Mark Morano is unleashed on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed on TNT with Mark Morano. We're continuing our discussion with Christopher Talgo, Editorial Director and Socialism Research Fellow, Managing Editor of StoppingSocialism.com of the Heartland Institute. All right, Chris, the pandemic, 2020, it's almost, I always say, like what happened with COVID was the same way gun control advocates wait for a school shooting, or the way biosecurity people who want to take away our freedom and have a surveillance state wait for a terrorism attack. There's certain things waiting and waiting in the wings for something bad to happen so they can exploit the politics. Do you think the write-in ballot advocates were waiting for something like COVID to have an excuse to impose this? And what exactly happened in COVID? How did they get to the point where there's a huge jump in mail-in ballots in 2020? You alluded to it. It was all about fear and saying you would die. But just how bad was it, and how ready were the proponents of write-in ballots, which they'd probably wanted for decades, to now move in and make it happen?
Yeah. So, like I said earlier, this trend of trying to increase mail-in voting has been happening basically since 2000, and it's been, you know, slowly but surely climbing every single election. But 2020 was a watershed moment because we had more than double the previous amount in 2016. And like you said, this was all based on fear mongering. This was all based on control. This was all based on states who knew that, you know, going and voting in person was not going to be a health hazard, literally trying to, you know, instigate, you know, this just panic among the people to say, you can't go and vote. You can't go and do anything. You must stay at home, vote by mail, and, you know, just trust us. That is not the way that elections, you know, should be run. You know, it's also interesting to note that, you know, Europe and most of the other OECD countries, they've done away with mail-in voting for decades. They know how fraught with fraud it is. So why is the United States moving the opposite direction of all of those, you know, other countries? I mean, there's so many, you know, pitfalls with mail-in voting, so many. And these states, I think, knowingly, you know, said, well, it allows us to flood the zone with, you know, ballots. And once those ballots are out there, it's just all about getting them back in. And then it's just a numbers game. And they think that they have a better ground game, the Democrats, the left, than the Republicans do. The Democrats have a much better ground game. They have a much better, you know, way of, you know, getting voters to the polls. They have a much better way of, you know, making sure that those mail-in ballots are getting, you know, put into the drop boxes. Ballot harvesting is one of their, you know, their best art forms. The GOP, the Republicans, the, you know, right, just they don't embrace it, you know, as much. And one of the things that's, you know, happening now is there's this this debate saying, well, should we, you know, everyone just embrace mail-in voting? You know, and I'm saying no. And we're saying no, because it's just going to be whoever can cheat, you know, the most will win the election. That's not how elections are supposed to be run.
Yeah. Wow. If you look at what happened with Carrie Lake in Arizona when she lost that race, she was crying foul. Was that write-in ballots? Was that voting machines? What was the issue there? And I know you didn't do an in-depth analysis on Arizona race, but what exactly do you think may have happened there?
Yeah, so the state of Arizona was, I think, one of the most, you know, in incredible stories of 2020. In Arizona, more than 90% of people voted by mail. Less than 1 in 10 went and actually voted in person. That's either voting, you know, on election day or in the early voting period. So I think that Carrie Lake has a very good argument to say, wait a second, all these, you know, people were sent, you know, mail-in ballots, absentee ballots. Just, you know, it was such a mess in Arizona. It took them days and days and days to get the count right. There have been multiple recounts. There have been multiple audits. The numbers keep coming back differently. Yeah, there was a lot of talk about the Dominion voting machines and other voting machines, you know, playing with the numbers there. But just across the board, Arizona was a complete dumpster fire in terms of the 2020 election.
All right, and then what about Georgia, the runoff election? I can't even remember. I can't remember what year. If it was 2020, but the or 2021, the runoff election. Yeah. And I remember that the Governor Kemp's like top aide or someone in his office was an executive on Diebold. There was a lot of questions about that. I remember people saying, like, don't even vote in that special election. And of course, the Democrat won. But what was going on in Georgia during those runoff elections with the voter integrity?
Yeah. So the Georgia case is another great example of, something going horribly wrong, but then them actually fixing it. So like you said, there was the double runoff. It was Warnock and Ossoff both were running, because in Georgia you have to have the 50% to win the election. So they did the runoff, and yes, there was a lot of dismay among GOP supporters by saying, we just don't trust elections anymore and all that stuff. But what happened after the runoff election is what really caught our attention. So Georgia and Florida really went out of their way to say, we need to clean up our elections. We need to make sure that that people who are voting by mail actually have an excuse to vote by mail. We want to make sure that the voter rolls are getting cleaned up, and we want to make sure that ballot harvesting is not happening, and just all that stuff. What happened, as I'm sure you remember, was the media went just completely crazy, saying this is all about voter suppression. This is all about Jim Crow. This is all about, trying to deny minorities the right to vote. But interestingly, in the 2022 midterms in both Florida and Georgia, the data showed that minority voters actually participated at a higher rate than they did in 2020. So it's just complete and utter nonsense, this notion that is, being brought out there to say that this is all about trying to suppress the vote. No, it's actually, it's really about trying to make sure that people are not disenfranchised, because every single time someone votes illegally, that's disenfranchising someone's, rightful vote.
All right, well, we couldn't have a complete conversation without at least having you address what the left says was the real problem, like in 2016, Russian interference in elections. And we had many election deniers of 2016 on the Democrat side, CNN, MSNBC. How much of a factor was Russian interference in 2016? I'm trying to keep a straight face.
Zero. Yeah. Zero, zero, zero. They keep playing the Russia card, just like they've been playing the race card again and again and again. They're doing it now. They're doing it again. And it's just preposterous at this point. It's just ludicrous for them to gaslight the American people to this degree and think that we don't know better than that. I think that the American people are really going to make their voice heard in 2024. As long as the election is on the up and up, I'm confident that we're going to have a landslide 1980 style, really? Huge victory. I am. Yep.
Well, okay. Why would you be? We only have about a minute and a half left or so. Tell us what reforms are needed and what reform. First of all, what's happened that gives you that confidence? And how do the six states, let's focus on this. What's changed now going into 2024 that's different? Is there a severe restriction on these mail-in ballots? What would make you that confident? I'm sort of surprised you're that confident, because I still feel most of the people I know are just kind of like, I wish we could win an honest election. I wish we could have an honest election and win, but people sort of resigned that they can't. Why are you so confident in what has been done and what can be done on the state levels?
Well, my first, I'm very confident because there's going to be no pandemic as far as we can tell. There could be something that comes out, yeah. But as of right now, their whole, pandemic excuse is out the window. So, the American people are, well aware that all that crazy stuff that happened in 2020, no way are they going to, be able to repeat that again. Some of those states have passed, some election reforms. That's great. We still have a lot of work to do, but I am confident that, the state of the economy, immigration, and all the crime is going to produce a huge Donald Trump victory in 2024.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's Christopher Talgo, editorial director, StopSocialism.com from the Heartland Institute. Thank you for joining the show. Thank you for watching. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. See you next time.